few last year, I guess, was it takes 3 years to become a proficient gardener.
Right.
Because the first year you are planting what people advise to you or your own liking, and then you start in second year, you know how it goes, you identify the varieties that did well, and by the third year, you are more confident that you can start experimenting with the new varieties.
Do you keep notes in a notebook or
that
something
would be
like that?
I should be keeping notes. I should. I haven't. So it's kind of a memory.
Yeah.
What it goes. But yeah, the memory can change. So you lose the memory. So yeah, we should be writing in a journal what we like.
Yeah.
As well, now there are lots of, here in Vancouver, there are several organic farms that are providing their own seeds. For instance, I'm with the brothersnature.ca. They provide quite interesting different varieties. Not the popular ones that is West Coast seed, but there is other, for instance, a purple pea, corn, a different variety of corn. And so they don't have a seed catalog.
Right.
So you just go to the website and you read through the, and then, well, you order it.
Yeah.
But they as well provide a little, the seed packet provides lots of information as well. So it's quite useful. So, yeah, what I have as well, I have come across is ordering from Amazon.
Mm.
It's interesting. They really come with seeds, so with very little, minimal information.
Right.
And so that's, I don't order any more seeds from Amazon. And there are packets in Amazon that you can have carrot, radishes, lettuces, all in one mix.
Yeah.
But, and there is not much information. You know originally where they come from or where they're still alive, the seeds. Yeah.
I guess the other thing about going to the seed store, on top of the selection you're going to have, there is, of course, there's staff there who can also help you.
Correct, the staff, and as well, not only they carry one brand, so West Coast Seeds, we have the Pacific Northwest, they have Burpees, and so on. So there is many brands that you can choose. Say, I like this from this brand, I like this particularly vegetable, and from that other brand, I have the other ones.
Right. So to finish up here, let's just sort of review, what are the key things the gardener is going to be looking for on their seed packets that's important to them?
So first of all, we have the date. If it's packed for now, all the seed packs for this year will be packed for 2025.
Yeah.
So we know that there are seeds that were coming from the last year crop.
Yeah.
So they are all, at least 90%, all the seeds are viable. If you put a seed, it will grow.
Right.
The other is if it is an open pollinated or hybrids, so there will be OP or F1, and then the days, how long it takes to maturity.
Right.
Now, days to maturity sometimes means from seed or from transplant.
Yeah.
So you have to see, for instance, this, I have a piece that takes, say, 70 days, so 2 months.
Yeah.
I will have peas. So it's, I'm always looking for the short time or to maturity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the back is the season. If it is for cold weather, summer weather, so for instance, here it says after April 1st, last frost. So, yeah, so that's the time to start putting the peas. And as well, they give you the distance, how far between seeds you have, the distance between seeds. The way that this is structured is that you are planting in rows.
Yeah.
And in that row, after a certain distance, you put your seeds. Here in SFU, we use the square foot gardening.
Yeah.
So in a square, 1 foot by 1 foot, we put a different number of seeds. So what I use is to see the distance they provide between a row and convert in a distance within a square foot garden.
Okay.
Yeah, so that, and as well the growing, and the growing characteristics, so if they need to be staked, or they can just stand by them own, and so on.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much. That's a lot of good information for people setting up their garden. Thanks so much, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability.
it's a pleasure to share some of the experience that we have gone through. Yeah, so you can reach Embark Sustainability. We are based in the Student Union building here in SFU campus, and you can reach us our email info@embarksustainability.ca or visit our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Great. Thanks so much. Talk to you again next week.
See you next week.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Peter, what do you got for us this week?
Well, I've gotten, I have on my tablet, my brother put all the Mad magazines on my tablet from when it started in 1952 till about 1999. Right now, Mad magazine only does old stuff. They don't do anything new. It started out as a comic book, actually. It was for about till 1955, mm-hmm. and because of the comic code controversy, that the company that did the Mad magazine comic book also did the horror comics that they
right, and there and there was like a whole sort of panic about whether comics were.
Well, because actually I do have on my tablet some of those, too, and there was some reason to be a bit complaining about it. In fact, ironic enough, the Harvey comics that later picked up the rights for Casper the Friendly Ghost from Famous Studios, they actually did horror comics, too, that weren't all that great. So literally you had Casper with the horror comic. So it's... But so what they did was in 1955 they did a pseudo magazine format.
Yeah.
That a lot of people think Mad Magazine still like a comic book because they still have a lot of those incorporations of it.
Right. But and of course it was all people may not today be as familiar with Mad Magazine, but I mean, for me it was like one of the the favorite things of my childhood. You know, when me and all my friends, we all got Mad Magazine and we pored over it and loved it. And it was still going strong at least until the 2010s, I think, when really online stuff sort of...
The National Lampoon sort of eclipsed it, but supposedly they never got the circulation Mad had. Part of it, I always thought the difference between National Lampoon and Mad was Mad had no advertising, up to a certain point.
Yeah.
It got advertising, but in its great day, it was able to make fun of advertising, where National Lampoon did decisively have advertising. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I saw a documentary. I'm not really been the National Lampoon. I did see the documentary about them. He actually went to advertisers of alcohol and cigarettes, and because a lot of people were kind of down on National Lampoon. He said, "What do you know? Your typical reader of National Lampoon drinks more alcohol than the average person, smokes more cigarettes." So that was sort of one of the selling points. Whereas Mad would kind of make fake advertisements, kind of putting down smoking and putting down alcohol consumption.
Such. And it also featured like movie and TV parodies.
Right.
So every time there was a big blockbuster movie came out, you know, you could wait in anticipation of the Mad Magazine parody of it, where they'd sort of retell the story in their own sort of unique way. Plus, there was other stuff. You know, the Spy versus Spy was one of the famous regular ones. The Lighter Side Of, which is something you brought up once before on the show.
Oh, yeah, because it was about
Al Berg.
The college students that were just wrecking the whole town.
Right.
And then some locals were complaining about it and said, "Oh, what's wrong with them? Well, they're just not in intellectual enough." Mm-hmm. That was my little thing we were talking
and
about.
And lots of sort of, you know, droll or funny sort of commentaries on popular culture and life and changes going on.
So
it's always fun.
In 1972, which I think Mad really reached its peak by 1969, and I think it kind of declined from there.
Right.
But this is the last thing I thought was really good that they did, and it's the Mad Guide to Political Types, 1972. So they have six of them, and we'll go from conservative, then reactionaries, then right-wing militants, right-wing militants.
Yeah.
And the other side, it's going to be liberals, leftists, and New Left Extremists. And so, why don't we go with reactionary? Because they got a few. So, a reactionary is one step above a conservative in his right-wingness. Right. So, I was going to see what the format is. They have these 20 squares, and they have the cartoons around it, kind of illustrating them. But they sort of, but with these 20 affiliations they have, and they all distrust Nixon, everyone. So it's really, and then they have the joke like conservatives hate being called reactionaries, and reactionaries hate being called right-wing militants, and right-wing militants hate being called fascists. And they do it again for the left-wing. So it's really 18 things.
So give us the lowdown on each of them.
Well, one, the reactionaries, I just want to make sure, because this is one I remember over the years. Are convinced Sesame Street is a subversive program. That's one thing the reactionaries have. Have middle-aged secretaries, do not sleep past 7 a.m., cross picket lines, do not mix ice cream, do not mix flavors in ice cream cones, wear suspenders, are suspicious of FM radio. Now, this is from 53 years ago.
Right, when FM was still pretty new.
So conservatives are one layer behind, and they undertip. They take pride in their regularity. Well, I got that one by accident. But they waltz. They are life members of the National Geographic Society. Now, we're going to go to right-wing militants. And one thing that's interesting they got here, this one, I'm pretty... Well, they hang around gas stations. And they have the illustration they have is these guys. One guy's on one of those drums or whatever with his fists shaking.
Yeah.
Only drink beer. This was interesting. Tattooed. Now, tattooing came around in the 1990s, and we're a bit older. We remember these older service people with the faded tattoo in our childhoods.
Only sailors and military guys had tattoos.
And then
long enough ago,
about starting the 1990s, it got sort of a progressive left wing. I don't know what it was sort of. That's one thing in our culture.
Yeah.
So tattooed like a MAGA. I don't think MAGA tattooed themselves. Fortunately, smoke camels. No roller derby stars by their first names. I don't think roller derby exists anymore.
Well, it does.
It does,
but not on TV. There's quite a roller derby movement here in Vancouver and on the West Coast. But it's very sort of grassroots. But it used to be on TV all the time back then.
Oh, yeah, that's... Well, yeah, I guess it was more in the United States. And the other thing is that Donald Trump went to a wrestling thing. And wrestling's all fake. I even checked into seeing if what he went to wasn't a fake one. I mean, that's sort of just silly.
Yep.
I know. So he's got a bit of affiliation with
it. Let's hear about the one... Well, you finished with the... Right-wing militants. Let's hear about the ones on the left wing.
Okay, so we'll go from liberals, that goes to leftists, and it goes to new left extremists. So we'll start with liberals. Now, but they bicycle. They have tried pot. They know the name of their congressmen. They get psychoanalyzed. They are cremated. They walk nude in front of their children, which is a bit. That's kind of an extremist thing, but I don't know. This is not extremist. It's just say peace. Yep. Feed their pets organic foods. Sign petitions. Subscribe to consumer reports. Now, but the leftists, they're not quite they're not quite the new left extremists who hate being called anarchists. So they enjoy folk dancing. Wear caps and mittens, eat thick soups, take in stray cats, omit zip codes, do not shave their legs, have missing shirt buttons, make bookshelves out of old bricks. So, and then the ones that are that don't be like be called anarchists, but they kind of but they shoplift.
These are the left-wing extremists now?
New left extremists. Yeah. This is grow their own marijuana. They just don't try pot. They actually grow their own.
Yep.
Burn incense. Shoplift. Own no chairs. Ignore New Year's Eve. Teach their children Swahili. Whereas the liberals just walk around nude in front of them. Watch the 4 a.m. movies on TV stoned. Cast their own horoscopes. Slouch. You know, so, some of these, how much do you feel from what I've told you that still stand true, Magnus? Or do you think there's been a real change in culture in general?
Well, when you look at the three right-wing types, you know, the right-wing militants have in many ways become kind of the mainstream conservatives, certainly in the United States. You know, you could basically say that the right-wing militants are MAGA, the popular successor of right-wing militants from 72.
I would say that. In fact, Trump is, as I said in a few other shows, looking superficially at Milton Friedman. I think in the next show I'm going to go look at more thoroughly at a lot of the videos with him to see where he was coming from. But they're actually like reactionaries.
Right.
They're not just your plain conservative, because this thing was the free trade, violating free trade agreements.
Yeah. And I'd say that, you know, for the extreme left wing, what were they called?
New left extremists?
Yeah. See, I think they've changed a lot because, you know, they're just sort of countercultural and, you know, thumbing their nose at society to a certain extent, but pretty mellow, whereas now you're getting much more, you know, your hardcore anti-capitalist, anti-racist, you know, the people who turn up at, you know, trade demonstrations and
oh, whatnot. So you're thinking they're even more extremist than these?
I don't know if they're more extremist, but they moved on to more concrete issues.
Move their belongings in wheelbarrows. I'm just reading. Like, it's more of a lifestyle choices, I guess they sort of do here.
Yeah.
And you're saying that they're mainly more serious in a sense, or
I don't know if serious. I'd say I just think they've moved on to new issues, which are probably more significant in opposing the way the world is, you know, than making lifestyle choices that don't align, which is kind of, it's pretty, everything's kind of soft and wishy-washy among them there.
Really? This is the new left extremist, but they shoplift, Magnus. I don't know. Well, they burn incense.
But again, that's like a small act, not like, you're not really trying to, that's like saying, you know, screw the man, as opposed to let's burn society down.
Now, one thing about the right-wing militants are tattooed. Now it's the exact opposite. You can go be sent to El Salvador.
Well, everybody of a certain age is tattooed, you know.
Of a certain age?
Yeah.
Are you, Magnus? I'm
no.
One of the...
No, you know, but I think, you know, people who came of age in the 90s and the early 2000s have a lot of tattoos often.
Well, the thing is now...
versus people before and after them.
But the Trump administration are sort of taking people to that prison in El Salvador, is it?
Yeah.
On the basis of their tattoo. So that's sort of a flip-flop from that.
Well, who knows? Maybe that makes tattoos more transgressive or something to be avoided. It's hard to say. I think we're out of time here, though.
Oh, I think we kind of covered it.
Yep. Mad Magazine?
1972. Middle of 72. Right before the election that got Nixon voted. They say it's a landslide, but it was, 60% or something?
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, if you don't know Mad Magazine, I'm pretty sure you can find stuff online about them.
I don't know how my brother got all this for
But it's worth checking out because it's very much something very particular of its time and a lot of fun to look at. All right, Peter R.H., thanks.
Okay.
You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Few Canadian elections in recent memory have captivated the public's attention like the one we are in right now. The looming threats from America have dominated the discourse surrounding the election, turning what polls showed to be a likely landslide for the Conservatives into a tight race focused on that central issue of economic health and sovereignty.
The things directed at Canada, it's just not something I've ever seen before.
I want us to be, I guess, almost like resilient.
Problems with the U.S. right
just
now.
Just like supporting Canada.
If you're like me, nearly all of the coverage you've seen about this election has been focused on Donald Trump's tariffs, with each potential leader stating how they will respond. And while this is an extremely crucial issue for our country, I was also curious to see whether it was the number one issue outside of the newsroom or the press conference, or if the public had other concerns that could play a role in their vote. That's why I ventured around SFU's Burnaby campus on a sunny Thursday to ask students about the issues that, in their opinion, were important to them in the upcoming election. So, let's hear from the people. So, are you aware of the upcoming federal election?
I am.
Yes, yes, I am.
Yes, I am.
Yes, of course I am.
Yes.
Perhaps unsurprisingly, there was one issue that dominated conversation. What do you think the most important issue is?
I think, like, beyond just, like, student stuff, I feel like a lot of flack and stuff is coming from, like, the U.S., so I'm a little bit, I think that's my biggest concern. Like, I want us to be, I guess, almost like resilient in regards to like the threats that are being placed upon us by the United States.
I think the most important issue for me is just their policy with handling like foreign affairs and, you know, just their vision for how companies should cooperate and just like engage in trade and stuff like that.
I'm concerned about the problems with the U.S. right now, with the trade war and the tariffs and whatnot, and how that's going to affect our economy and daily lives.
I would say, you know, it's scary, some of the things that are going on south of the border right now. There's a lot of the things directed at Canada. It's just not something I've ever seen before. And ensuring our own security in this situation, I think, is the most important. And that is both political security, economic security, and defensive security.
One person even clearly addressed their fears of American influence on one of the parties.
For you personally, what's the most important issue?
Not having our government be fascist.
Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I think that the conservative government is has a lot of communication with some far-right individuals in the South Pacific, specifically in the U.S., and is getting a lot of funding from them for their campaigns, and I don't agree with what they want to do in terms of how they control the government. Yeah.
Gotcha. And where have you seen this information about their funding?
Just around.
And then as a student.
Particularly about Daniel Smith.
However, while all students took the tariff seriously, some also had different issues that took priority, often related to personal backgrounds and experience.
I think talk about the tariffs is obviously important. Talk about immigration is something I'm looking into for each of the candidates, and then also key environmental issues. How about you?
I definitely think like focusing on our economy right now is probably the main idea. So yeah. That's what I'm probably gonna think about in regards to that.
Absolutely, and just like supporting Canada as a whole.
The most important issue would me personally, it's pharmacare and education.
Why those?
Well, first, I think being able to afford medication is very important. Like, as with healthcare, like, well, after you get your healthcare, you need to be able to get a way to like afford your medications. That otherwise, the healthcare doesn't really do much if you can't like prolong your health with medications. And with education, I mean, I'm a student, and my brother, he's heading to university soon. It's very expensive to be a student, and to have some of that covered by the government would help out a lot of people.
The opinions of these students can have a big impact. We are a population that can often deeply feel the burden of inflation, the housing crisis, and cuts to social services. We also have a sizable influence, as there is roughly 330,000 post-secondary students in BC, or just under 6% of the province, who can vote in the upcoming election. The students I talk to have clear ideas about how they want to see the federal government support them and their peers, and most often comes back to their pocketbooks and being heard.
How do you think our politicians can support university students specifically, or young people in general? Is there anything as a student that you'd want to see from the next federal government?
I guess if there were to be any problems with club funding, I feel like that's really important. I feel like the initiatives that we have here and the initiatives that are starting to arise at SFU that are focused on community and connection are important at SFU, but also all other universities. And that's kind of all that I could think of right now. I feel like SFU itself does a pretty good job at the work-study program and providing bursaries for students, from what I've heard. So that's not something I'm too concerned about.
I think that there can be a lot of work to support, like, university students when it comes to, like, certain benefits and costs. I know for a lot of university students that I know personally, there's a lot of issues with, like, healthcare that they don't see as much support in and that they think they could get more out of. And I personally also think that that should be something that our current politicians should look at more.
I mean, anything related to, like, the improvement of like, infrastructure, anything related to, like, budget for, you know, post-secondary and education, I think is good. And, I mean, for me, I think that would be, like, the biggest thing. I think that things can, there are plenty of issues and stuff with, like, budget cuts and stuff around here. I mean, UBC, I think, too, has some. And, I mean, I feel like that would be the biggest thing, just getting more money into the stuff, you know, allowing more student events, more, you know, more ambitious, like, things in the future for that.
Probably by actually talking to students. I don't know that there's been a significant effort for parties to do that, because I haven't seen that. So, yeah, I feel like as someone who is fairly into politics, like, that seems like a kind of gap in communication.
I think subsidies for student programs, for example, like extracurriculars for students, and like as it goes for like more younger kids, it's a lot of times it can be difficult for them to break into any field of extracurriculars because it can be quite expensive. And definitely one way to help is that they could subsidize some of the costs, like a rebate that would help students like have some extra money to pay for whatever programs they wanted to take.
Well, it would be nice if, you know, the necessities, the things that we consume, like food and whatnot, were more affordable. But, of course, that is an ongoing issue. I mean, rent is high. You know, everything is expensive.
Yeah, but affordability, right?
Yeah, affordability is quite a problem, at least for, you know, I think many students and just people of this age in general.
People in our situation would primarily be looking at the are at risk from the economic side of things currently going on. There's also the fact that we are an activist community to some extent, whether by choice or by association, and that carries ideas that are under challenge right now, both in the country and outside of it. Yeah, I would love to see making sure that our student body is free to still express their opinions and to make their voices heard without fear, and to be ensured that we are not overly economically burdened by the situation, that we have paths for it and that we have guarantees on that.
The American threat is certainly discomforting for Canadians, but has also united many of us. The common element between all of the voices you just heard is that they are passionate about this election, ensuring that they elect decision makers who will keep their future and their country secure. And if you want to make sure that you have the information and knowledge to make such a decision, well, these students have some advice.
You know, you seem pretty informed about politics, so how do you follow politics if our listeners want to get more involved?
I think ever since getting to university and, like, living in residence, it's a bit harder for me to keep up with the news and everything. But I think that personally it's very important to keep informed. So I'll go out of my way to, you know, watch, like, news videos on YouTube and look into certain sources and making sure that I double check everything, like, not just believe everything that I see on, like, social media and stuff.
Listen to various news sources and cross-reference them and look at the information that is consistent and who is consistently saying what.
Liam McCarrigirio, CGSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to 2.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
the strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.